The mystery missile off the coast of California. Something or nothing.
I have a great fear that this is really something. The United States government has come out and said, and not quite definitively enough for me, said that this was probably, that is their word, probably an airplane. Probably doesn't make it. We both watched the event. I think this could be aliens.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
And this is, it's very scary. The other thing, the missile went up. When does the missile come down? More importantly, where does the missile come down?
You were putting a call to President Blair Underwood. I knew that you would think
that's right.
that these beings were like
that's
94%
right.
human. Flying.
Well,
no,
if it comes down
this
on
is
your
nothing.
Head.
This is a movie promo out of Southern California.
No.
That's all it is a marketing campaign. Reality? It is nada.
Absolutely nada. Wilbon's right. Falling off the table there. The missile's nothing. Wilbon gets the win.
This was definitely something.
Hate this game.
And the only other story I have is on the under the double question mark category because I didn't even know. You
That's
know,
a good category.
Yeah, the parts unknown. And that was the
category.
I guess you could call it the mainstream. You know, the big story that the mainstream picked up because actually of all these, I think the Jerusalem one probably got some traction, and I'm sure there was some Bud Hopkins obituaries and papers and stuff. But really. You know, the disclosure story did get a lot of mainstream publicity, but the big one that got a ton, I think, was the Annie Jacobson Area 51 book.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest, or one of the biggest UFO stories of the year, easily, because, like, I saw it everywhere and all the mainstream media and shit, and it was awful, because, well, I don't know, though, because, I mean, I've heard varying sort of takes on this, and, you know, from what I understand, the source that she had is sort of faulty or something like that, or the story that she's putting out there isn't exactly on the up and up, but there's...
Well, why would it be?
I know.
Because she's talking to a bunch of people whose job it was to keep secrets. Are people whose job it was to keep secrets ever going to tell you the whole story? No, they never will. They're going to tell you what they've either been allowed to or they think is kosher to be told, and that's what they told to her. And I think they wanted to just stop people talking about it as a UFO kind of thing. And you know what? They may be right. I don't know. But the thing is, I went and saw her speak at the LA Public Library live. She was there for like an hour answering questions.
Did you ask her anything?
No, I didn't ask her anything because everybody else asked the questions I wanted to ask. It's just, I couldn't do it, or I was just so shocked that she was there talking about this stuff, and some of the people that she talked to in the book were there, these old guys. I just couldn't do it because I didn't think that if I asked the question, one, I couldn't ask it the right way. You know, I felt kind of tongue-tied. I was a little nervous, me. And then and the other thing was I was trying to think of a way to ask it so that I could figure out in her answer what she was dealing with.
Right. I know what you mean.
But yeah. I mean, just ask an oblique question that might not be exactly what I wanted to know, but in the way she answered it, I could figure out a little bit of what was going on. And I couldn't craft the thing properly while I was sitting there because I was listening to the other answers.
Interesting.
And there were some good questions there, like, you know, can you trust these people? And she's like, well, they're very nice guys and they're patriotic Americans and this and that, you know, the standard. The thing that was annoying about people asked her certain questions about how she got the information or what about this Stalin thing about putting, you know, somebody had to ask it. Of course, when somebody asked that question, the whole audience started laughing. Not laughing,
oh, God.
Pittering and giggling.
Right. Well, that was the thing. That was the part that really got a big chunk of the mainstream media attention, too, was that she introduced a new version of the Roswell story. But, and I wish we had Nick on the show tonight.
Yeah.
Because it was sweet vindication for Nick Redfern, who got a lot of shit from people in ufology for his book.
But what are you going to do? You going to believe a bunch of people from the government that might be lying to a journalist who wants to, you know, who's just basically listening to their story and spitting it right back out?
No, but the point I'm making is that
there might be something to what Nick was saying.
Right, that there's some kernel of truth to that story because now it's come up again. It may not have been Roswell. It may have been something somewhere else or something like that. But I think maybe that scenario played itself out somehow.
Japanese ones, but whatever.
Right.
The thing that annoyed me about her at that thing is that she constantly said, well, you have to get the book.
Oh,
she just couldn't answer questions. If she'd answer them like, she would either halfway answer them and say, well, you just have to read that in the book. It's like,
ugh.
Why don't you just answer the goddamn questions. If people like your answers, they'll buy the book.
Chances are they probably already bought it if they come to see her, or they're going to buy it afterwards.
I mean, Sigrid, my wife bought me a copy of it, and I still haven't read it. Because her personal appearance annoyed me so much.
Well, it's ridiculous. She's playing to like the smallest percentage of the audience. The good percentage probably already has the book or bought it. It's ridiculous.
No, well, it was a bestseller. It's not a small audience. It did really well. Because I think it's something people wanted to hear. And it's that tried and true, formula. You tell people something that they didn't know about something. You let them in on a secret, whether it's the real secret or not.
Right.
I think they admitted a lot of what was going on there, but I also think that they probably either one didn't have access to everything, and two probably couldn't admit everything, and three they were still spinning. Now because there's still research going on there.
I'm sure it's a combination of all of the above.
You know, and I think she was there to as a pretty good writer I guess at least respected in the newspaper world, journalist. To tell the story and spread whatever they needed spread. Part of it's disinformation, but the thing is that there's probably a lot of like real information in there.
You
got the whole story. There was just a story out recently about this, program in the 1960s and 70s, I think, where they had satellites taking pictures of, Cuba and China and Russia and everything, and the satellites would take these huge rolls of film, take the pictures, and then jettison the film, and the things would parachute into the Pacific, and planes would come and grab it out of the ocean. I mean, incredible stuff. And, people I saw on Facebook, other places, finally they can admit something like this, and I was thinking, I bet that's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10% of the story.
Right, right.
There's so much more there, and that they can only talk about certain amounts of it or whatever. There's probably so much going on there, and there's probably stuff that's still connected to stuff that's going on now that they can't really talk about. So it's, in the final analysis with Jacobson's book, even though I haven't read it, I think that, I know I'm primed to think this way because of the Project Beta and the people I've been exposed to. That when something is admitted like that about a secret project, that it's invariably because there's many reasons. One, they want to just stop rumors and shut people up. Two, they want to create a story that people can live with and say, okay, now we know the story. And two, and probably more importantly, spin the real story so that it can be, used for something else, maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, you brought up something interesting, too, here. When you're talking about just Area 51 in general, and just sort of like this thing we saw this past year, with these, like, drones, it feels like drones and these exotic-looking craft are becoming a little more open. They're at least, like, being a little more... showing us a little more of these exotic stuff. Because I put it on my Facebook page, like the headline story for CNN, I think over the summer one day, was that like this spy plane, I think it might have been a drone, went missing. And the picture was like an artist rendering, and it looked like a black triangle craft. And it was like, well, geez, dude, like how much more do you need to see? Like that's how many, how many countless people probably saw that thing, or some of these crazy drones. And, having called them UFOs for, like, the last 15 years.
Well, there's that Russian, those Russian pictures and video for the protest, I think a couple months ago. People said, what the hell is that thing? There was something, like, with flashing lights hovering over them.
Yeah.
And they took video of it, and the thing looked like a stupid drone. They were probably taking video pictures of people that were in the protest.
Right, right.
And the funny thing was, it was, like, totally obvious that it was out there and everybody could see it. So, I don't know what cynicism would work there, but maybe it's kind of like a big middle finger. You can do whatever you want. We're watching you.
Right, exactly. Or like, that would be more unnerving than anything. Well, I heard an interview with someone talking about these drones and stuff, and like part of it is like psychological warfare almost.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the the ones we know about are kind of weird enough. What about the ones we don't know about?
Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, I heard from, I think it was from Walter, actually, from Walter Bosley, that when he was in Afghanistan, he heard stories from people that had come from Iraq about something that would come in before the stealth fighters. And basically, like, one, freak people out, and two, knock out a whole bunch of electronics, and then leave silently.
Wow, interesting.
And, you know, that might be a rumor. I don't know if it's real or not, but the point is that the stuff we hear about is old stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's been being used for like the last 10, 20, 30 years, and we just know about it now. So what the hell is going on that we're going to find out maybe about in 20 or 30 years? That's what's being used right now that freaks people out, and it probably accounts for a lot of UFO reports, and has been pointed out millions of times before. I'm sure that the government is happy for people to think that. And they'll go through the whole thing of explaining it, that there was nothing going on, and they didn't have any, they didn't scramble fighters, and no, nothing showed up on radar, and, you know, people must be seeing things. Fine, confuse everybody. I mean, that's old story, and it's been used many, many times, and it still works.
Yeah, exactly. They're happy for people to think that they're UFOs, you know?
So. Yeah, I did a lecture where I showed some of these drones. I just picked up the pictures off the internet, and people were like, "What the hell is that thing?"
Exactly, exactly. You'd think an alien was
yeah. You look at this. One of them, the best one was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was these two counter rotating helicopter blades. But that's all it was. It was like this body with these two huge counter rotating helicopter blades on it. No fin, no tail, no nothing. Just like this kind of two or three, like, spheres, and the two, one on the bottom and the top, had helicopter blades on them. Really strange-looking thing, but it flies fine. There was a, I had a picture of it in the air flying.
Weird.
And that's open. I mean, that's available on the internet if you look for it. So.
Yeah.
It was, like, 2 years ago, so what the hell's going on now? What's been developed? I mean, you know, anti-gravity, I don't know, silent jet-propelled something, I don't know.
Right. But,
It's even weirder than we can probably imagine at this point.
And those are the big UFO stories of the year. So people who are listening to this 10 years from now, those are the biggest ones I could find.
what did we talk about last year that that Nick and I just kept saying we don't care?
I can tell you because I have the list here. Last year we talked about Stephen Hawking warning against contacting ETs. The Vatican astronomer wants to baptize ETs.
I actually
heard an interview now with the guy who was behind that whole story, and he said it in jest, and then the media made a big deal of it. So, so that even makes it more interesting. This WikiLeaks and UFOs, that never developed into anything, really.
Nope.
The Chinese airport shutdown, as we talked about, didn't really develop anything. The UFO nuke press conference did not really become much. Leslie Keene.
Robert Salas, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what else that did not gain any traction in the mainstream?
There's another cool guy. Robert Salas is one of the nicest people, and I think he's experienced what he said he experienced. What it means, I don't know. He's got his own interpretation of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, solid guy, nice. You know, one of the nicest people you could ever meet. Really smart guy.
Right. Right. But the UFO nuke press conference did not develop in anything.
Yeah.
That we can see now. Leslie Keene's book got big attention. That was a bestseller, but that did not really develop into much. The Denver ballot initiative that failed.
The Romanek thing? Or
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Is that who it was? Stan Romanek did that?
I think...
No, it was another guy. It was another guy around Denver.
Yeah, I forget his name right off the top of my head.
Yeah, and then he wanted to build a landing pad outside of town or something.
He was the guy that was on Letterman, I think.
Yeah. So everybody could laugh at him.
we remembered Zachariah Sitchin, Jerry Smith, Bertolt Schwartz. We talked about the Emma Woods thing and James Carrion leaving MUFON. So those.
Oh, okay. I think there's a lot of fertile ground there for talking. I think that, you know, not caring about China, not caring about that report, not caring about Emma Woods and all that. I mean, I think that's probably a, all people remember the controversy. They don't remember all the other stuff we talked about.
I thought it was a great episode, so.
I did too. I liked doing it. Everybody thinks I went on and said, "Oh, I don't care. Screw you people. It is stupid. Get off my lawn, you damn kids."
No, dude, it was awesome. Now, I do have a few other stories here that I thought were worth mentioning that didn't
sure.
That didn't make the top 10 list that I saw or sort of fit into these categories. The we talked about this on your show, and I almost don't want to beat a dead horse, but this story, people should check this out. This story, I really should have watched the video again, but I remember watching it the first time. It was, there were like these orbs flying around the shuttle, and they couldn't do something with it, and it was on the news, and NASA was like, yeah, there's these things that fly around the shuttle, we don't know what they are, but we've been seeing them for years.
Oh, then it's aliens!
Exactly. But it was, I thought that was the most...
George Tiscalos on my site that says, I don't know, therefore aliens.
Well, I thought that was, like, the best story of the year as far as, like, good, tangible, if you want, disclosure. Like, here's NASA saying that orbs, at least, they don't know what they are, you know? We don't know what they are either, but at least, you know...
The ones in that video.
Right.
It's been in more than one, hasn't it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. We'll have the link up in the recap, but I thought that was an interesting story, and we talked about it on your show, but, you know, just because there's some disclosure, in a sense.
When Grant Cameron is on my show, he was saying people are screaming for disclosure. It's already happened. Just people don't want to believe it.
Exactly.
He's got a very good point.
Exactly. So that goes to
the government has admitted that there's, you know, unknown things, and certain people, the disclosure people have brought people out from the military saying that there's things that they've seen that freaked them out, and they didn't know what they were, and were told they were aliens and all that. Yeah. I mean, how much more of a disclosure do you want?
You just need that big permission slip from
the permission slip from the media where it's the lead story for 3 days and all that. Yeah.
So, yeah, check out the NASA orb story, folks, because I thought that was way underappreciated, I guess you could say.
What does it amount to? I'm saying it's unknown. It's not like, you know, Adamski saucers with arms sticking out and waving.
Yeah, they're just like little dots.
Yeah, little dots flying around.
You know, if anything, yeah. I mean, like, to go back to the analogy of UFOs as birds, like, you know, those could just be like the pain-in-the-ass hummingbirds of the UFO family.
Yeah,
and well, like even the aliens are like, they're just little fucking specks. They just get in the way, you know.
Like you said
they're
earlier, it's not. It could be, like you said, it could be more than one thing, and we're only concentrating on one part of it, and the government maybe only is concentrating on one part of it. There's a huge spectrum of stuff that falls under UFO. And, you know, it could range everything from aliens to other planets to Trevor Constable's idea that there's some kind of strange living creatures living in the sky that aren't the kind that we normally think of. Or
exactly, yeah, yeah. Well, it's like...
To interdimensional things, to, you know, all these things.
Right, and like we assign also, you know, this, you know, to the overarching thing, there. I do think there's like this intelligence, but I think also that... We can't underestimate sort of like the District 9 idea that there are some intelligences that are like, that may not be as like smart as us, but they just have abilities that we can't comprehend. Sort of like, you know, like I'm saying about the hummingbird idea, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're UFOs, you know, they're extraterrestrial maybe, or maybe they're just, you know, of the Earth and we can finally see them, but they're just like some kind of bug or something that we don't know, you know? It's like, we just don't know. So.
Or D, you know?
Exactly.
Of the above.
The next, the other story that stood out to me, I sort of actually picked this up in the last day or two, I would have ranted about it on your show if I had seen it before then, was the excitement behind this Kepler thing. And Friedman was really excited about it on my show, and having looked more into it and heard more about it, I am excited too, just that it's like pretty cool that it's finding these planets. What I thought was interesting, this part I think you'll like, is that at my work, they have, like, magazines at this little waiting table, and someone, like, refreshed the magazines by bringing in, like, year-and-a-half-old ones. So,
yeah.
So there's an astronomy magazine from, like, May of 2010, so 18 months ago.
Yeah.
And it's, like, one of the articles, like, right on the front, like, the search for is intelligent life out there, right? So not even like that. So it was 4 pages. It was written by, like, some highfalutin astrophysicist, I think, from Stanford. I gotta see if I can find it online, because there was a great line in it that made me laugh. I scanned it, of course, looking for UFO. No mention of UFO or anything, because this is, like, Astronomy Magazine. But what I thought was interesting is, in the section on Kepler, he's like, it's going to take many years for Kepler to find an Earth-like planet, if they even exist.
They found one, like, months later.
Right, right. And I like
this. They found more than one.
Burst out laughing, because it was like the biggest news of the last, like, 6 weeks was that they have been finding Earth-like planets. So it's like this guy, and I said to somebody where I work with, I was like, if he's so certain about this, like, 18 months ago, and he's been completely disproven, like, in short order, like, you know, it just shows to show you that they're really just guessing about a lot of this stuff. They really have no idea.
Yeah, and the other thing is what the planets they're looking at, they're, these goddamn things are hundreds of light years away, or maybe more like thousands.
Yeah.
They're looking at the planets from thousands of years ago. Well, that's the other thing. You know, they don't exactly know that they're in the region where they would be, where liquid water is possible. And that could be anything from, you know, nothing to microbes to things like us to things more advanced than us. But, you know, we're looking at it, you know, all we know is that there's planets that could that could support life because water, liquid water would be possible on them.
It's interesting, as we talk about this, though, too, that we talked about this on your show where we were talking about whether the government would disclose about ancient aliens and ancient artifacts to sort of get people ready for eventual alien disclosure. And I almost wonder if, well, obviously, this Kepler thing's part of our ongoing interest in space and learning about it and everything else. I mean, there's that going on.
Yeah, whether you're interested in UFOs or not, anybody would love to know if there's planets that could support life as we know it.
Right, right. And I think also it goes to this idea of, like, educating maybe the public or preparing the public in a sense where it's like, if we can find the Earth-like planets out there and then we can find the planets that have the water and everything, then eventually when the whole alien thing breaks, we won't have to do all this explaining to people that it's possible. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's this whole, like, that's impossible. There's no planets that can have...
Yeah.
Now that we found them, it's like, all right, well, that's been eliminated now, so you don't have to worry about that.
People, they were just looking for evidence of something they already knew was there. I mean, there's so many stars and galaxies and all that, uncountable, that there's got to be other planets around.
Right.
And as a subset of that, there's got to be planets that can have liquid water on them. There's just by process of, just by statistics.
Exactly.
Got to be. They just wanted, you know, proof that they could see, you know, get some sort of external evidence besides just, you know, the statistic probability. And they have that, and that's fine. And it doesn't tell us where anything's coming from those planets or anything like that. I don't think they can physically do it. It's just unless they figured out a kind of physics that's at the edge of our understanding of physics, where you bend space so you don't have to travel across the distance.
Yeah, I think they probably have that kind of, you know, or some kind of interdimensionalness.
If there are things coming from other planets and structured craft, then I can accept, you know, if that theory is valid, I can accept that they could do it. The thing I can't accept is they've been doing it so damn much. I mean, how many looks do you need at a planet before you, you know?
yeah. So you're going to buy the place or not?
Yeah, exactly. that's another stumbling block in this whole thing, the elephant in the room, where people say, well, they're coming here. It's like, how many times do these things need to come here? Or are there just so many myriad places that they're just all coming, you know, millions and millions of different civilizations are stopping by? I don't know. Maybe that's true. It seems kind of weird. And the other thing is people are like, why did it explode so much in the 1950s? It's because communication got a lot better. I bet people were seeing these things just as much as ever all the way back through history. It's just they couldn't tell anybody about it.
That's a good point. I never thought of it like that because people always sort of tie it in with the nuclear stuff. And I'm sure there is a part of that, but also that, yeah, that there's been so much more advancement of media and communication that, of course, it's become more... Yeah. Yeah.
I could have lived with a family of aliens and, you know, in 1632 out in the middle of, in the steppes of Russia, but we would have never heard about it. Nobody's ever heard about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. So that's sort of my excitement take on the Kepler thing. But I think it serves a dual purpose to also sort of like get the, you know, the stick in the muds who are like, you know, so there's still people out there that think planets like that don't exist. So It's like, no, they do, dude, so you can stop arguing that part.
You have to be a complete moron, not to just by, like I said, it's a process of...
Right, right.
Well, statistically, they have to exist.
Right, right. Well, it seems like...
There's a question about that, but I guess some people need to see the, you know, I want the proof here in front of my picture. You know, pictures or it didn't happen.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that science did come around in recent years to the point now where, as you said, they were just trying to prove something they already knew. But it was, you know, for the longest time, it was like pure up, straight up denial that it was possible.
Yeah, and until somebody proves that we can bend space somehow, not just theoretically, but actually, then that part will be, remain, you know, kind of
yeah.
out in the weird ether for a while. you know, there's that great paper, what's it called, Inflation Theory Implications for Extraterrestrial Visitation, written by a bunch of people, including Bruce McAbee and Hal Puthoff.
I think I remember this article, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a science journal, right?
It's a science journal, and it's from a science journal. It's a scientific article, and I'm a dumb person, so I'm reading it. I've got to read it very carefully and read certain passages over and over to get what they're saying, and I think I can get most of it. And the upshot was that according to M-brain theory, which is basically a fancy or a simple way of saying multidimensional, I believe, if you have enough energy, you can get two places in space together and eliminate the space in between them, essentially, and move between them, theoretically. And they're saying if this is theoretically possible and is possible, then there could be extraterrestrials coming. And I'll go along with that. That's fine. I don't think it explains everything, but I think it's a good argument for the ETH.
Absolutely, yeah. See, we don't hate on the ETH.
People think I'm all hating on the ETH. I don't. I don't eliminate anything. I just, like I said, if a bunch of people are standing there waving a flag, I'm wondering, you know, I'm wondering if they're all deluded or something.
Exactly. To go back to my earlier analysis, there's many birds in the sky. Some are eagles and some are pigeons. It's a good time, I guess, in the year in review here to sort of get to the wrap-up in a sense, which is... every year we talk about this. I haven't gone back and listened to these to see how right we are, but maybe other people could tell us. But and usually it's me who does most of the pontificating. But it's sort of like the state of the paranormal, where we're at, what's hot and what's not as we close the year out and get into the new year and stuff. And seems like finally maybe the ghost thing is on the down. And
what?
I know. I feel that way. And I feel like cryptozoology is on the up. I feel like there's a Yeti mania going on.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, Lauren predicted sort of a big boom in Yeti interest, and that's taken off, really, in the last few weeks. And I feel like, and they have that show, Finding Bigfoot. It's sort of like the Bigfoot.
I watched that show. I laughed all the way through it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I've heard that it's like, it's got camp value, I guess you could say. There's a lot of people that watch just to laugh at these guys who are.
And it reiterates was that your theory, Sigrid? My theory that most guys that research Bigfoot start to look like Bigfoot. There's like three guys on there. One's this huge guy who has this big Mongo-looking dude, and they actually use him as to show to a witness. It's like, did it look like this? And they have this big dude run across the road like Bigfoot.
Oh my God!
And the other two guys have a bunch of facial hair, and they're kind of burly guys. I was like, oh Jesus!
Maybe it's like you look more like your pets, kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe that's it. A lot of Bigfoot researchers end up looking like Bigfoot. I don't know what the deal is with that. We went to the Bigfoot Museum in Santa Cruz. We walk in the door, and there's a big burly guy with a lot of facial hair. Like, oh, what a surprise. Really, really nice guy. A lot of fun. Showed us a lot of cool stuff, but looks like Bigfoot, man. That is a fun show. It's, you know, the whole time it's like they're standing out there with night vision equipment, and I keep saying, did you hear that? What was that? And then like 5 seconds later, the guy would say, did you hear that?
Oh, God. Yeah, it sounds like it's like Ghost Hunters of Bigfoot.
And they never find anything. And like, well, they didn't on that show. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, they haven't found, you know, it's sort of like...
Well, it should be obvious by now, I think, that they're... not not physical all the time, I don't think.
Right.
Or they're really careful about burying their dead and their poops.
Well, I think, yeah. Like, I think that they possess some kind of ability that we don't quite understand yet. But I haven't completely given up on the flesh and blood animal part of it either. Again, it goes to the birds theory. Because I've had guests on, we've talked about this, and I think Lauren talked about this too, where it's just sort of like, there's many different types of Bigfoot. Amongst that mix are probably these paranormal Bigfoot.
Okay, yeah, but the thing is, people still haven't found any physical. Well, besides that finger that he talked about from Nepal.
I think that got disproven.
Yeah, well, they said it was the DNA was human-like or something.
Oh, okay, so it's still on the fence.
Yeah, so it's like, well, if there is a Bigfoot, what does human-like mean? A Bigfoot is human-like.
Exactly.
But, you know, if you saw chimpanzee DNA, you would know that it's, after looking at it for a while, you would know that it's chimpanzee DNA, but only because you saw that, like, you know, 2% it's not chimpanzee.
Yeah, and because you have, like, a book that matches it up with the chimpanzee DNA.
2% that's a human, sorry.
Yeah. So, cryptozoology on the up. Ghost hunting, I feel like, is on the down. Also in part because, as we talked about at length on your show, 2012, that's the big on the up this year. And I've said, I think you said 99% nothing's going to happen, and I'm at 90.
Yeah, and that half is divided. I think the last half percent was divided between something like half of the percent is everything goes to crap and the whole world changes and the poles shift and all that. And the other half a percent is, what was it? I can't remember. Only half of that percent, I think, is something's going to happen. The rest of it is that. Oh, the other half of that percent is it's a nodal point at which things start to change in some subtle way for us as a race. Not you know, tidal waves and nuclear wars or anything like that, but a different way of doing things or looking at things or whatever.
Yeah.
The other 99% is nothing really is going to happen whatsoever, except for the self-fulfilling prophecy of people that think something's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Well,
you know,
I recommend people check out our conversation because we covered that like for right, like 90 minutes on your show, the whole 2012 thing. But
yeah,
I feel like as I said on your show, just to bring up one point that people should be excited about and sort of keeping in line with this sort of a meta look at the paranormal is that, you know, by this time next year, 2012, we'll be figuratively and literally over. So
yeah,
we won't have the whole 2012 speculation anymore.
Or we'll be over.
or we won't be here doing the show.
Yeah,
so,
besides, what the hell is everybody so scared about? You know, what if we're not around? Well, then if you think there's the death is the end of things, so what?
Exactly.
If you don't think it's the end of things, hey, there's more stuff to look forward to.
Right. I don't worry about that kind of thing. It's like if we're going to get wiped out by an asteroid, you know.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. If we get wiped out, then yeah.
Then we're wiped out, so it's over.
Such a cool thing to happen. What do you think people would do, you know? I mean, everybody, it would be like Omega Man, except everybody would be doing it. It would be stealing cars and driving around everywhere. And
like Mad Max, yeah.
Killing people and throwing stuff out of planes and crashing them into their enemies' houses and all that stuff, whatever. It would be totally exciting for about, you know, however much warning we had.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't want to have things get that interesting before they died?
Exactly, yeah. You don't want to just, you know, you don't want to just die, like, just out of nowhere before all this crazy stuff happens.
Yeah.
And as I said, since I figure people would listen to this down the line, too, you know, it's like the 2012 thing will be gone, then hopefully more people will look at other stuff in the esoteric. I'm sure a lot of people will leave. I'm sure a lot of people will change the goalpost and move it to a different date, but at least we won't have to talk about it anymore, which is, you know, pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Because
that thing will be out of that elephant will be out of the room.
Exactly.
And like you said, there'll be a intellectual or thought vacuum, which will then be filled with something else, which we don't even know what it is yet, and that's exciting.
Right. And as I express, in case this happens, I want it on the record, I do express some concern that, you know, 9/11 followed Y2K, even though they're not related at all. that somehow, like, in the consciousness, there's going to be this bad thing is going to happen, you know, just somehow, in a way. I don't know. Just a weird feeling I have. A thought. Not a theory, not a prophecy or anything crazy like that. Just like, you know, a sort of sinking suspicion, I guess is the best way to put it, that, you know, we're going to get through the end of the Mayan calendar fine, and then, boom, World War III is going to start in 2013, because everyone's like, blows off all the steam. They're like, well, we survived that, so now let's take over the world.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning of the show, it's going to be a real bad year if you're a Mayan.
Exactly, yeah. If you're you know, a noted author on the 2012 theory, update your resume.
So my point was saying, if you're a Mayan, meaning they were looking at, that's their calendar. I'm not a Mayan scholar. I don't know how to read the Mayan calendar. And I know there is disagreement on what the end of the calendar meant, and the counting used and all that stuff. But I think they were looking at it from their perspective, from their point of view, not, and this was 700 years ago or whatever. Did they figure out something in the ether that we don't know about? I don't think so. It's just the way they used to count time. Besides, has any prophecy of any import ever come true? Like end of the world prophecy? Never.
Right. Right. And so, yeah. So 2012.
Is this one better?
What's that?
What makes this one any better?
Because it's really old?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that are really old.
Well, I was going to ask you. I meant to ask you this on
saying the world's going to end. I mean,
yeah, they've been saying that forever. Well, what it's I guess different at the source level than Y2K, and I wasn't in the field when all the Y2K madness happened. But what were the similarities and differences between these two, date phenomenons that happened.
Well, Y2K was just basically based on just computer stuff. It had nothing to do with Mayans or anything. They just,
right.
The computers couldn't handle it, and the infrastructure would break down because everything was based on not being able to count into the 2000s.
Right, so it was more just like there's going to be technological chaos.
Yeah, all the computers that controlled the power supply and the nuclear power plants and all that were all going to go wacko and haywire, and things would start blowing up, and it'd be Mad Max immediately. And, of course, nothing happened. But, right. that wasn't a big mystical Mayan calendar thing. That was just a modern technological perceived apocalypse, I guess.
Right, right. And then as far as big paranormal genres go, I'll also make this point here at the end. 10th anniversary of 9/11, I think it's safe to say the 9/11 truth movement's like flatlined, if not completely. There's a few diehards still in there, but it's just not, you know, walk away, folks. This is going to be the new JFK assassination. You're never going to get the answer about what happened, so, you know.
I never heard anybody say it that way, but you're 100% right. I think it is a new JFK assassination. It's just not going to – it's probably far more complicated than you make it out to be, with elements of what you think it is and other ones that not nobody knows about, hardly anybody knows about. But, yeah, just like the JFK thing. Very smart thing to say, yeah.
Thank you, thank you. And to take it further, actually, I was thinking about this after I said that. It even has the Oswald – this was the closure year of the 9/11 thing, you know. They got bin Laden and they Oswalded him, you know.
Yeah.
Like, he'll never talk, he'll never say anything, we'll never get any insight into his role in all this, so
told us they Oswalded him.
Exactly. Right, right. That whole debacle, but, you know, in a sense, on a psychic level, on a sociological level, it's like, all right, they got bin Laden, the 10th anniversary, it's, you know, it's over. We've moved on.
Yeah, that's it. It's something that people, yeah, yeah. Get over it, dude. There's just not, why worry about it anymore?
Right. So,
let's move on.
So 9/11 is kaput as far as the esoteric community, I think.
And
you only have to look at the Occupy Wall Street thing to kind of get that idea, because, like, you know, you didn't see a lot of people sort of
There were no 9/11 truthers standing around with signs to occupy things.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Like that whole, the 9/11 thing really relied on sort of this like pissed off youth movement too, I think. I think that's under
laughed off the street and told to leave because it has nothing to do with what was going, you know, that was not the message.
Right, and they'd actually probably be like, ostracized, you know, people would probably be like, get the fuck out of here, man, you're, don't bring that shit over here. Like, just like you didn't see any UFO people in the Occupy Wall Street thing. You know, it's like that should show people what the young and the disgruntled care about. You know, at this point, it goes back to like, forget disclosure, dude. I'm worried about a foreclosure. Like, people can't. You know, that's a Friedman
line. Just
made
that up.
No, that's a Friedman line. I have to credit him with that one.
Oh, okay.
Brilliant. That's why he's ufology's great one.
Great one, capitalized all three words.
That's right. He's like the Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Occupy Wall Street thing kind of crystallized, you know, people aren't passionate about this anymore as far as like this anger. I guess you could almost say like the fringe people who normally would pick up this kind of stuff, they're getting into the Occupy thing, and they're also kind of like how the Tea Party thing happened. And now we're seeing the 2012 election is going to take a lot of attention away from people who aren't going to be able to turn their attention to the paranormal. So we'll I think that'll unfold a lot too.
Oh yeah, anytime something big happens, the paranormal just folds for it. After 9/11, nobody cared about ghosts, UFOs, psychic, anything for like 5-6 years. It just was not. It wasn't even on the table.
Right. So.
You know, that's the middle of when I was writing Project Beta, but that became more of a political story. But it's anything like something like that happens magically somehow. No UFO sightings, at least no big, you know, flaps of anything. No, you know, and no developments in anything because no shows come out about it. Nothing, no books because people are so worried about everything else.
And exactly.
The next time there's a big terrorist attack or any kind of real big world-changing thing, the UFO thing is just going to die again for a few years. That's just the way it's going to. And I don't know why that is. I mean, apart from the fact that it's not that important to begin with. But
right, I think people probably.
I think the thing is still there, but it lends credence to my theory of we have to be there, caring about it and interacting it to have it exist.
Yeah, almost like the UFO phenomenon is like, they're busy right now. Let's let them straighten
that up. Yeah, or we stop paying attention to that thing because we're so worried about everything else, about, you know, how many times we have to take off our shoes before we get on the plane or whatever. Or, you know, in my neighborhood, I live in a neighborhood where there's a big Hasidic Jewish neighborhood right next to me. After 9/11, what do you think I thought? So, it's a matter of priorities, and if the priorities come up, I think our brains, our little receivers that receive this stuff start shutting down and paying attention to what we perceive as our survival.
Right, exactly. And with the economy the way it is, and I think the election and the economy are still going to be what are on people's minds a lot, you know. They may use the UFO phenomenon and the other paranormal stuff as an escape, but they're really not. You know, it's not as important to them. I'd wonder that, though. I mean, maybe you know this. Is it sort of like, does it sort of go with the economic ebbs and flows where, like, yeah, I guess it must, because things were pretty flush, like, in the 90s, and that's when people were really into this with the X-Files and everything.
Yeah.
So maybe it does lend to that.
I think there's a direct relationship to how good people feel about things. And if everybody's real happy and sort of carefree and everything's going pretty well, you can start looking at some of these crazy things that don't really have a very important bearing on your daily life. I think that's why the UFO thing just stays, and the paranormal just stays out of the mainstream, is because it just really doesn't have a bearing on most people's daily lives. And so it becomes less interesting. And then if everybody's worried about something or concentrating on something else, it has even a less bearing on their lives. So it starts to recede more into the background. I mean, that's not some rocket scientist thing. That just seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's like, and plus,
most people listening, I'm sure.
And you know, and just it, and then you tie in the whole media thing where it's like the media They're distracting
that's
people.
Thing. We're being told what to pay attention to.
Right, and it's garbage. It's like Charlie Sheen and fucking Lindsay Lohan and shit, and like big those like you know the royal wedding and stuff. It was like these things were like the big stories of the year. And it's like
yeah, I think the yeah, I don't think UFOs are that important, but I think they're more important than that stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
My opinion.
Exactly. But, like, the media, you know, gets people thinking about this crap, and then UFOs gets pushed down to, like, fifth or sixth on their interest list, or eventually just pushed out, where they're like, I don't have time to think about that. But what's on TMZ tonight?
Yeah.
You know, so, well, people don't want to be, like, you know, average people don't want to have spend time thinking about this. They got other problems. That's the
problem. I mean, I think the other thing is I don't think you see people below a certain economic level at UFO conventions, because... it's just not, you know, the stuff isn't important to them. You see people that are retired that don't have to worry about where their money's coming from, I hope.
Interesting. Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but yeah.
And you see maybe like a few young people that are, you don't have to worry about life too much yet.
Yeah, and they have like disposable income and shit. Yeah, that makes sense.
And then, you know, weirdos like me and a lot of people I know that are either speaking there or just so obsessed that, you know, they can't help it.
Yeah, or go to see people they know.
Go to see people, yeah, or just go hang out with and see people you haven't seen in a while. I mean, that's I love doing it for that. I've gone to conventions where I haven't listened to any of the speakers. I just went and hung out with people.
That's the most fun of the conventions.
Yeah, because nobody's speaking on anything I want to hear. The last time I did, I think I went to one convention. There was one talk I went to hear. It was about the couple of guys that had police officers that had investigated the drone photographs.
Okay, yeah. Well, especially too when you see some of these speakers and stuff, this is a good chance that you know them and you can have a conversation with them. You know, where it's like they're not presenting something; it's in a conversation form. It's more of a give and take.
Yeah,
you know, like with your show and my show and stuff like that too.
Yeah, I'll go see like you know what? I'll go see Nick Pope and ask him what's going on and how he's doing and you know what's new with him and you know have his ideas changed and all that. Or I'll see Rich Dolan and we'll talk about you know his book and if he wants to be on the show and his 19th century baseball team that he plays on in New York and all that. So
Right. It's like, it's much more, a conversation is a lot more fascinating than a lecture. And
yes,
we're extremely fortunate.
That's why a lot of people go to those things, which is why when people try to talk to me, if I'm speaking, I don't just go, oh, I got something else to do. I will sit and talk to them because that's what I want to do.
Exactly. All right, well, that's pretty much it. I can't think of anything. I looked at, you know, most of the other stories are kind of silly. The Flockalypse, remember that whole thing where all the birds were dying?
Yeah, did you hear that it was probably, the latest thing is it happened again. Fireworks?
Yeah, I heard it happen again in that town, like the same day and everything.
Oh, really?
Year.
Yeah, because somebody said they found, like, in the field where all the birds died, they found a bunch of remnants of fireworks. Now, of course, a conspiracy person, oh, they're just trying to say that to keep you away from the real truth about whatever that real truth is. But apparently they found some fireworks, and the fireworks had made the birds panic and fly into each other, which sounds kind of weird to me. But, you know, how many birds panic and fly into each other? That doesn't happen to them. But maybe it does happens with fireworks. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. Birds, they're weird.
And it only happened the couple of times there. So you know, either it's a very strange thing that those birds just do there, or there was some kind of testing going on. They're trying to cover it up, or it was a bunch of dudes with fireworks. The guy said that it looked like they were set deliberately to freak out the birds and kill them. I don't know how they figured that one out, but
yeah, who knows.
Who knows? It's
story.
Not that really big of an important story, but it was interesting for a little while. A nice little mystery.
Yeah, it's like those weird old, like, Fortean type stories. It's nice to get an old one.
Fortean type stories. In fact, I find Fortean includes the UFO stuff, which is why if somebody says ufologist, I probably say no, I'm probably more like a Fortean. I'm just really interested in the stuff and I'm agnostic about it.
Yeah, yeah. That's the safest place to be. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Despite how people, you want people to fucking become carrying members of some, you know, belief system.
Yeah, the other story that I brought up on my show was that ridiculous NSA extraterrestrial messages over the radio story.
Yeah, should you tell that? I tell people just to go listen to this episode. I'm gonna put links and shit to it. But I guess
we can mention it. The story came out in April or something that the NSA had released a bunch of UFO documents because they were on the line because they were tired of like answering people's FOIAs, and one of them was something to do with how to decode the extraterrestrial messages. And if you read the text of one of the thing, the main one, it says, you know, for quite a while, messages have been received from some extraterrestrial source. We're trying to figure out what they are, and here's a way of figuring it out. And it's like this really long, involved thing of assigning letters to the pulses that were received, and how they could be interpreted. And, you know, that's your first clue. It's like, you're putting alphabetical letters on alien extraterrestrial messages? What the? And then if you look at the other piece that's in the much smaller one online there at the NSA, there's a line in there saying, see if you can figure these out. And I looked at that, and I was like, wait a second. This looks like one of those exercises they have, like puzzlers they have in Scientific American or whatever.
Yeah, it's like highlights for the NSA.
Yeah, exactly. It was basically highlights for spies, for
yeah.
Little boys and girls spies. It was just an exercise for cryptographers, for code breakers. And a lot of people at the time took it seriously. I think Open Minds Forum said, hey, wait a second, this is just some kind of exercise. They figured it out very quickly. I just looked it up and started reading it. I was like, what? Really? And then about halfway through it, I did by, hey, wait a second, this is too ridiculous. And it's a puzzle.
I mean, yeah.
If it was really, you know, it was just way too obvious. If it really was extraterrestrial messages, it would have gone about it like that.
Yeah.
And it got very, very involved. I mean, to the point where you have to extrapolate this and use a logarithm for this. And it's like,
my God,
I couldn't understand it at all. I'm just too stupid. But, you know, obviously it was some sort of a puzzle for.
Did anyone ever decode the message? And was it like, congratulations, you get a free, you know, taco at the NSA cafeteria.
Yeah,
saying this word.
Yeah, it says CIA killed JFK. Congratulations.
You figured it out. Yeah, so that pretty much wraps up the year and everything. The only other thing that crossed my mind just now was, you know, UFOs in 2012. I think it as with everything at UFOs, I think it all depends on who's behind it and if they want to do anything to change the game. I don't think anything here on Earth is going to change. You know,
I don't think so either. And I've said this before. I think the change is going to come in the way we think about things. That will change how the UFO thing is looked at and maybe more of a key to what it is. And I think and a lot of it comes from us and the way we look at things and what we expect and what we want out of it. And whatever the thing is, it's just there. And once in a while, it comes over and tickles us in some way. And not in the way Whitley Strieber talks about.
Kind of like your appearances on our show.
Yeah. I didn't touch you in a bad place, did I?
No. You're no Sandusky.
Okay. See, we finally got around to that. That's topical.
Exactly, yeah. See, like, no one... In 20 years, no one will get that. They'll be like, what the hell is he talking about?
What is it? That's why you have to leave it in.
I know. Oh, it's in there. Don't worry.
And like I said, I've like firmly convinced after a while that we are a lot of the equation of the UFO thing, and we don't want to admit it or we don't notice it because we're so close to it. And once we realize that and figure out how that manifests, I think we'll be closer to some sort of answer about what the UFO thing is and what the source of it is and what's been causing all these reports and all these encounters and all these abductions and all these fairies and elves and incubi and succubi and yeah, all the stuff I think that hooks into that where it's kind of at the edge of what we know and perceive and get a handle on. UFOs are just part of that spectrum.
Yeah. So.
So there you go. Now, that shows that I care.
And what about 2012 for you? What do you have going on? Did you ever release the information on the guy that you said you figured out who it was or you thought you did and you were going to write about it?
I keep working on the article, and as I get further away from it, I'm like, God, I'm going to really have to, like, dig in and figure out when I found this and who it was, and Bill Moore is off the map, and I can't find him anymore, and he doesn't answer my emails. So either he's died, or he just doesn't want to talk to me anymore. So that's not a source of information anymore. So I'm just going to have to go through my thought process and what happened with Bill and how I figured it out and put that out there, because I have no real way of proving it. You know what? There you go. That's nice that you mentioned that. If I don't finish that by the end of the year, then I'll stop all UFO stuff. Because I think I've said to so many people, yeah, I'm going to put that out, and I just never did. And it's kind of almost a non-issue now, so.
Yeah, I ask about it like every time. Every time.
Yeah, that will be my goal this year, Tim. Thank you.
I will
an article, and I'll either release it on my site, or I'll sell, you know, give it to 40 in Times or something like that.
Nice, nice. Well, what else, any projects you're working on that we should know about?
Well, I'm trying. I'm writing another book, and when that happens, it'll be done. And I'm writing the introduction of Paul Kimball's book.
Nice, nice.
And I want to have a lot more people on my show this year from talking about different things. After listening to and looking at who you've had on for guests, the ones I haven't listened to from last year, I'm like, oh, God, I've really dropped the ball here. I've got to get some new and different people on. Somebody suggested I should get somebody talk about near-death experiences. So maybe I'll do that.
Yeah.
I had a big interview on it, Excluded Middle, like in the third issue, I think.
Nice, yeah.
So that might be an interesting thing. And the other thing was the sky quakes, or the sky is anomalous sky noises.
Yeah, you were talking about that on your show. Weird, like, baffling, mysterious, anomalous noises.
Yeah, go on, you know, anybody listening, just go on YouTube and start looking up anomalous sky noises or weird sky noises. And all these, like, cell phone videos and other videos come up of, like, just basically people's houses and countryside, and then, like, you know, if the microphone's good enough, some strange noise coming through. And, you know, maybe half of them are hoaxes or whatever, but it's not like the sky noises thing is anything new. It's been around forever. It's just suddenly now that people have all these recording devices, they're recording them, and they're up. Somebody suggested Paul Devereaux, and that's somebody I always wanted to talk to, so maybe I'll get him on.
Nice, nice. Well, folks can stay tuned at RadioMysterioso.com, right?
Yes.
Nice, nice. And UFO Mystic Sora is still your hub?
Yeah, I guess, but I write something, you know, like once every month or two, because I had to write four times a week, because that was my contract. And I wrote everything. I dumped my brain out. In like 5 years, I said everything that I wanted to say about the UFO thing, and then when I'd start writing something else, it's like, oh, wait, I already said that.
Right, and it's hard. I find it's hard to write and host a show, because I used to write a lot, and then I started doing the show, and it was like the writing, you know, fell by the wayside.
When my show came back, I kind of lost interest in doing the writing on for the site.
Right, it's like some kind of connection there. Maybe because you know you're on the show, you get to express your opinions that. Then you know you don't think to sit down and write them because you already said that on the show, kind of thing, you know.
Well, the thing I'm writing now is going to be inclusive of a lot of the stuff that I've written over the last few years, just said in a different way and with the latest thing I think about them. And
do we have a title yet for this?
No, there's no title.
Okay.
I want to make it a popular book, too. It's not going to be a book for UFO people with, like, inside jokes and all that. I want the widest possible audience.
Absolutely, yeah.
You'll
never satisfy the UFO people anyway.
I don't want to satisfy anybody except myself.
There you go.
But when I'm finished with this project, I don't know. Maybe I won't write any more UFO things. I have no idea. But it's basically everything that's been going on for the last, you know, 10, 15 years of my thought process, I think.
Nice, nice. And you're working on that this year, so we'll look
forward.
Yeah,
I've gotten in a little bit further in that one. And
nice. All right.
So that I shouldn't have said anything. Now it's going to make me less likely to do
it. No, don't say that.
I'll take Adam Gorightly's advice. He said, just write something every day, even if it's a sentence. And he's right.
That's true. I need to get back to writing myself. So
anybody out there listening, if they want to write a book, just start writing it and then don't stop.
Until
it's done.
To the end, yeah. Well, we've come to the end of this conversation, so I can't thank you enough, obviously, for coming back once again. And, you know, we talked for 2 hours like 3 days ago, and now we've talked for like another 2 hours here. And we've really put 2011 to bed, so.
What a gab fest.
I know. I hope folks enjoyed it. I hope they enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. I think both conversations have been really thought-provoking and really, I originally remember our very first conversation where you said, you know, the UFO phenomenon is like this thought process or thought puzzle or something like that. And,
a thought experiment.
Yeah. And that's always sort of stuck with me, and you know, I've always felt the same way, having really processed that idea. And, you know, like I said, the 2-hour show on Radio Mysterioso, 2-hour show here, just a lot of, you know, thinking about this and kind of going back and forth was sort of like, you know, well, what do you think of this? Well, what about this? Well, what if it's this, you know? And I find that refreshing and better than, you know, saying it's definitely this and here's why. So that's why I enjoy our conversations quite a bit. And, well, we'll be talking again in 3 months for the baseball special anyway.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And, you know, hopefully someone will buy your down on the luck Dodgers soon.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Magic Johnson will do it. He still keep making noises about it.
Well, Joe Torre said he wants to buy them today.
What? With what?
I don't know. He's probably part of some consortium.
Yeah, it's going to be like, by committee,
Yeah, I know he resigned from his post at Major League Baseball.
Well, don't get him in there to break down another closer.
Well, anyway, it's been great talking to you, and, you know, we'll be talking to you soon.
Yes, Tim, I had a lot of fun. I always do, and, God, any time you want me to come on again and spout more opinions and verbiage, just ask.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, as I said on Radio Mysterioso, I want to get, now that I'm getting more free time a little bit on my hands here, I want to sit down and really pick up Project Beta again and have you back on to talk about that, because, like I said, it was only my fifth interview.
Few things have changed since I've written it, and yeah, I'd love to talk about it.
All right, bro. Well, have a great 2012. We'll be talking soon.
All right, thanks, Tim.
That does it for our 2011 Year in Ufology Jam session with our good buddy Greg Bishop. Big, big thanks to Greg for coming back on the show and keeping the tradition alive. You can find out more from Greg at the websites www.ufomystic.com, and the podcast can be found at www.radiomysterioso.com. If you want to hear more of this conversation, definitely go to RadioMysterioso.com and pick up the January 1st, 2012 edition of the show, featuring nearly 2 more hours of conversation between myself and Greg Bishop about 2012 and 2011. Before we dive into BOA audio listener feedback, first let's take care of an in-house note, a very good in-house note actually for a change, which is always nice here at the end of the program. What almost all of you probably do not know was that for all these years doing the program, I've been using an old 2003 computer to run the entire operation, not just the podcast, but also BOA as a whole, and my computer here has been just really old school in a lot of ways, and over the past couple of years, it's gotten just maddening how slow and out of date it had been. But I never really got around to upgrading until now, which is the exciting part, because over the holidays, I took advantage of those Black Friday sales and those really slashed prices and went out and picked up a top-of-the-line computer here for BOA HQ, and I can honestly say that the difference is breathtaking. A lot of the stuff that we do on the program here used to take quite a while on the old computer. For example, just to take out the phone fuzz for a conversation like the one you just heard that was over 2 hours, that would take me probably 2 hours in and of itself to do all of the tinkering with the sound files before I could even sit down to edit them. This new computer does everything about 100 times faster, so what would take me 10 minutes now really only takes me 10 seconds. It's absolutely amazing. And is thrilling for me and exciting. I can't wait to really dig into BOA here as we go on in 2012 with some tremendous firepower behind me now that we did not have over the last few years. And a lot of stuff that I've wanted to do has become quite possible once again thanks to this upgrade. So very exciting for me. I don't think people will notice a specific change right away, although I can tell you that episodes will definitely be coming out a little bit faster now. The operation will definitely be a little bit tighter now, and I did have to upgrade to a new form of audio software. Luckily, it's pretty much the same as what we've been using all along for BOA Audio, but there's some slight changes here or there, so there's going to be some little quirks that I'm going to have to get used to, but overall, just really a major upgrade for BOA in general. So hopefully you'll be seeing some improvements for the entire franchise across the board as 2012 starts to unfold. Now let's move on to BOA Audio listener feedback. We got three emails here. They're kind of short because I know we're pretty late into the new year to do the year in review episode. I want to get it out to folks here tonight, but we cannot ignore the BOA Audio listeners who write in. So the first email comes from David. No hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. Just discovered BOA and loving it. Keep up the great work and greetings from the frozen tundra of Scotland. Signed, David. Pretty simple. Just want to read that one just to give a shout out to another listener all the way over there in Scotland. Sounds like we're establishing a beachhead in Scotland between David and the emailer from the last edition of the program. I'll put the call out to David and last week's emailer. Find me some esoteric guests for Scotland. I'd love to explore the paranormal of Scotland for sure here on the program. So if David or last week's emailer, I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me, if either of those guys has some insights on who we should talk to from Scotland, shoot me a line, and I'd be happy to get in touch with them and develop a program around Scotland's paranormal lore. Next email comes from Eddie. No hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. I accidentally clicked the link to the classic version of the website earlier and found my way to the audio archives where the X conference recordings from, I believe, 2005 were listed along with the special session with Webster Griffin Tarpley. The links didn't work. Any plans to add those to the regular archives? I'd like to have a listen to those if possible. Anyways, I love the show and I look forward to each new episode. Keep up the good work and have a great 2012. Eddie. Thank you for writing in, Eddie. Thank you also for bringing these two omissions to my attention. The X conference sessions, that's where we kicked off BOA Audio from the very beginning. And yes, that was 2005. And the special session with Webster Griffin Tarpley, which came back as a lost episode and apparently has become lost once again. But we're going to try and get those back up at the website soon. I completely forgot about those. But I definitely want to get them out to people. Although there's a good chance that now that we have this firepower behind us at BOA HQ, I will take all those smaller X conference sessions episodes and put them all together into one large 2 hour plus episode, because I think it ran only about 3 hours total, all that material, and we sparsed it out over a few weeks when we first kicked off this concept for BOA Audio. Now might be a good time to sort of collate those all together and put them out as a special episode. So keep your eyes peeled for that. I may do that in the near future, but I will definitely get those interviews back online in short order. And once again, thanks for bringing them to my attention, Eddie. I always appreciate when folks write in to let me know when things are missing or not working at BOA. Otherwise, I wouldn't know, because if I knew they weren't working, I would fix them. So the more folks who write to me and let me know about that kind of stuff is always helpful. Final email this week comes from an expat BOA listener, James, and here's what he has to say. I'm a fellow Bostonian living in Tokyo, Japan. I really enjoy your podcast. Keep up the good work in 2012. I hope the Mayans were high on cocoa leaves when they wrote their calendars, and we all live to see 2013. James. Another email from an international listener, although as I said, an expat international listener. We're getting more of those folks listening to the program as well. And put the pushpin in Tokyo, Japan, my friends, because we've got a BOA Audio listener establishing a beachhead out there as well. Thank you for writing in, James. Much appreciated. I agree with you. Hopefully the Mayans were on something strange when they wrote the calendars, and we'll all make it through to 2013. I'm pretty confident we're going to be all right. And, hey, like I said on the program here this week, if we get wiped out, we get wiped out. And in the future, the ancestors will dig up this edition of BOA Audio and laugh heartily at how foolish I was to dismiss the Mayan calendar, but I have a feeling we're going to be okay, and hopefully this whole 2012 mania will lead to some good things for everybody in the world of esoterica, and we won't be made the fool too much by the mainstream media when nothing happens. So those are the emails this week, David, Eddie, and James. Thanks for writing in, guys. Much appreciated. If you want to be a part of future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, here are the ways to do it. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to banalofamerica.com and click the contact button. And the final method is to join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. It is BOA's paranormal playground, lots of discussion on the esoteric as well as pop culture. So if you have a foot in either of those camps, come on over to the US of E and join in on the fun. And, of course, I am on Facebook and Twitter, so if you want to find me on there, just punch in Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, and feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. Up next, let's thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Jovi, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our contributing cartoonist, Andy Carolan, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. The BOA staff has been sending me a ton of stuff here to kick off 2012, so stay tuned to BOA for new postings from the BOA staff. I have still got to get used to some new changes on my computer here since we've upgraded, as I said, to now Windows 7, which is completely different from Windows XP with regards to a lot of the little quirks when it came to updating the website. But we're getting the hang of it now, and hopefully these thought-provoking columns from the BOA staff will get posted in a more timely fashion here in 2012. Plus, I'm working on some big, cool things for BOA here in the new year. So stay tuned to Banal of America for all your paranormal news and opinion needs. Now comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the BOA Audio listeners and ask you to make a donation to Banal of America and BOA Audio. Before I give you the details on that, let me thank, and I won't name names because some folks wish to remain anonymous, but let me just thank all the great folks who stepped up to the plate over the holiday season and made some really healthy and helpful donations. You guys are awesome, and I really appreciate that in a huge way. For those folks out there who have yet to make a donation but would like to, here are the ways to do so. You can go to banalofamerica.com and click the PayPal button. That'll bring you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. If you don't trust the internet and you want to donate via snail mail, you can do so by writing to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. So altogether, it's Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And if you make a donation, please make it payable to Tim Banal and not Banal of America, because my bank will not cash those checks. And please include some form of correspondence so I can get back in touch with you and thank you for your donation. As always, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the audio series and the website up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Next time on BOA Audio, it is the third portion of our triumvirate of traditional episodes as we welcome back to the program for the 4th January around extreme explorer and world-class cryptozoologist Adam Davies for an update on what he has been up to in the past year. For those folks who have not heard, Adam Davies took another trip to Sumatra in search of the Orang Pendek and is once again tantalizingly close to proving the existence of this beast. We're going to get all the details on his 2011 expedition to Sumatra. We're also going to remember his expert guide, Sahar, who passed away just after Adam returned from Sumatra. Very, very sad story. Very good friend of Adam's and a tremendous asset in the search for Orang Pendek. We'll remember Zahar on the program, and of course we'll deal with a whole bunch of other crypto stuff with extreme explorer Adam Davies. That's next time on BOA Audio. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Once again, big, big thanks to Greg Bishop for coming back on the show for our year in review jam session. Thanks to David, Eddie, and James for contributing to BOA Audio listener feedback. Thanks to our good friend Pete Diggins for providing the theme music to this installment of the show. Check out his website, orophonic.com. And, of course, big, big thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA audio listeners. I hope, once again, that you all had a fantastic holiday season. I can honestly say, and if you heard the Radio Misterioso episode, you probably got that vibe from me, that I am just tremendously excited about 2012. I feel like it's going to be an amazing year for BOA and for the BOA audio listeners and supporters. Thank you for your tremendous patience in 2011. Hopefully it will all pay off here in 2012 and beyond. You guys are the best, and you are, of course, the fuel that drives the BOA mothership. Thank you for your support of the program, and thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.